This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. I'm going to continue reading from A Field by Sumner Madison and his personal recollections of being with Sigurd Olsen. His family was very close to Sigurd. I started last week. I hope you have heard that, or you can look it up on the WDRT podcast archives on the WDRT website. I visited Sig once in 1979 at his home in Ely, Minnesota. This was 2.5 years before he snowshoed off alone into the woods and then suddenly, naturally, fell over into fresh snow, never to rise again. The steamy July day I spent with him, recalled below, included an unexpected invitation for me to spend the night alone at his Listening Point cabin. And what a night. It was wonderful beyond words. A meditation within a pine-enshrouded temple, where the only sound was the wind coming and going through the long white pine boughs and the wide-open cabin windows. July 12, 1979. A gravel road leads to a two-story wood house half-hidden by pines. Voices and the scraping of metal come from around back. Following these sounds, I find Sigurd Olsen wearing baggy khakis, shirtless, with his shoulders pink from the sun. He is shoveling dirt. A baseball cap turned upward covers chalk-white hair, but does little to shade sunlight. His weathered face is ancient and kind. Furrowed lines run across his forehead, and ochre tinged with raspberry colors his nose and cheeks. He has just finished planting a white pine sapling between his home and his neighbor's, where the town of Ely had cleared vegetation to get at broken sewer lines. He levels a mound of soil and smooths the ground with a rake. A gray-haired friend of his in overalls stands a few feet away, hands on the end of a shovel, and watches. Standing nearly 6 feet tall, Sig slowly raises his back from its arched position and stares down at the sapling. It seems fitting that he would be repairing this small space of disturbed land. He has dedicated his life to caring for land. "Let's go to the cabin," he says on greeting me. "We can take a swim and talk there. Might be cooler, too." This is the famed cabin located on land known throughout his writings as Listening Point. It is land that borders the BWCA, and a place many have come to know well through his books. The dirt road into his land is hilly and slow, as it should be, he says. When we arrive at a cutout parking area, and I open the car door, the forest air is humid, tropical. Cedar, pine, birch, fir, and maple surround us, and songs of black-throated green and Wilson's warblers are near, with wood thrushes, song sparrows, nuthatches, and chickadees further away. A brief shower has passed through, and beyond through a stand of cedar and aspen I can see lake water. "The cabin?" I ask. Sig says it lies about 200 yards to the west, over a slight rise in the terrain. Closer by is the sauna. He starts down a narrow footpath rutted with veins of white cedar. Sphagnum grows between and over stones. The trail passes by clusters of violets, gold thread, and wood sorrel. Soon a Finnish sauna built in the 1920s comes into view. Sig moved it there over snow and ice decades ago. The sauna is dark and cool inside. We pass through a room where bathers undress and walk into the steam room. Here a pile of stones lay encased in a steel crib next to a barrel stove. Cedar boughs, switches, tied by twine, hung from an iron nail. Sig laughs, recalling those souls unaccustomed to the whip of the boughs on their backs. "The use of cedar switches opens up one's pores and hastens the cleansing process," he says, "and leaves you rejuvenated." He points to the walls and roof and asks me to get close and examine how dark the logs are. Taking hundreds of saunas, especially when no stovepipe was present, just a hole in the roof, are the cause of the logs' deep mahogany color, he explains. This place smells so good when it gets going, and nothing is more exhilarating than a dip in lake water after sitting in temperatures of 175 degrees, he says, smiling. For seconds after the plunge, one feels neither heat nor cold, nor any temperature sensation, he says. It's as if one's body has become part of the liquid, bones and flesh suspended in ether. Afterwards, one emerges tranquil. Lingering, pungent odors of cedar tempt him to start up the sauna fires, but the day is already too hot and he decides against it. Let me take you to a favorite spot of mine. The narrow footpath winds toward the lake. A few yards off it, he locates a depression in the ground, guarded by dwarf dogwood, violets, and mosses. Here is a spring well with a round, flat stone covering the opening. Overhead, a red-breasted nuthatch calls, a soft nasal drone high up a cedar branch. Sig kneels and uncovers the well, a small black pool. The purest water around, no chemicals, no nothing. Here, have a sip. The thin, clear water from a tin cup is achingly cold. Rising slowly, he glances at his hands for a moment, then examines the trunk of a white cedar an arm's length away. These trees are old friends. Sig turns and walks on. The path leads to the foot of a bay and a pine deck, with two weathered gray wood chairs facing southwest. He steps up to look over the bay for a moment, then turns back to the path again. But something catches his eye. He stops in his tracks. Wild strawberries, the first of the year. Have one. Walking on, he talks of the downed trees now coming into view. Now you're beginning to see the results of the tornado that blew down an enormous number of trees last year. Nothing hit the cabin or woodshed. We were very lucky. The footpath narrows and traverses a slight depression a few meters from the water's edge. He stops to listen. An oven bird, numerous blue jays, and a black-throated green warbler are present, but these aren't the sounds that have captured his attention. Instead, it is a deep, resonant voice from the water's edge. He turns to walk again, but the green frog bellows. "Oh, come on, we'll be back," he says, smiling. Soon coming into view is an open-faced woodshed, where split wood stands neatly stacked. Sig wipes perspiration from his forehead and stares at the rows before him. The tail of an old stump sits nearby. It serves as a block for splitting logs. His log cabin is about 30 meters west of us. There's more wood here than I could possibly ever use. This chopping block has seen a lot of good use over the years. It's rock solid and will last for years to come. He points to a huge balsam fir that just missed striking the shed roof and shakes his head, then laughs. It's enormous, isn't it? Would have been quite a mess if it had hit. He removes a handful of keys from his pocket and surveys the cabin. Ivy runs along and up the stone chimney. The rest of the cabin is slate gray with hand-hewn logs and windows almost 2 meters wide on each of three walls. Keys jangle, and the door opens. There's lots of tradition in this old place, he says, stepping into the coolness. I've had it for almost a quarter century. Let's open the windows and get what breeze there is. A latch opens in the middle of each window. We swing them open and tie each to a nail with a leather cord. The rolling whistle of a veery breezes in, and at first I cannot tell from which direction. It's as if an open tent encloses us, not a cabin. Kerosene lamps hang from three walls, and one sits on a cedar table by the west window. There is no electricity here. The only amenity to remind one of modern life lies against the east wall. It's an oven-sized refrigerator powered by natural gas. Birch pegs on the north wall serve as a hat rack, and here I recognize a hat, gray and soft as felt, worn by Sig in book photos from his days as a guide. Pine bookshelves line the tops of four walls, and they are full with accounts of regional folklore and history. Two beds on the north and south sides lie under the windows, Hudson Bay blankets and patched quilts cover both. It was built, likely in 1899, and I bought it from a family about 10 miles south of our home in Ely. It was standing unused at an old farmstead site, and the young couple there were building a new house. They didn't want anything to do with this one. I went out there one day and said, "What'll you take for the old one?" "Well," they said, "would $200 be too much?" "Sold," I replied. We tore it down, hauled it away in the winter time, stacked and marked the logs one by one, and brought it out here. Winds from the southwest drive cumulus clouds toward us. Will there be another rain today? Sig wishes to take a swim. We change into swim trunks in the sauna and walk to the foot of the bay. The pine boards of the deck are hot to bare feet. Anticipating this, he wears an old pair of sneakers, laces left untied. Sig slips out of them, sits down, and dangles his feet in the water. For a few minutes, I turn my back to the sun to catch the sight of a singing Blackburnian warbler. When I turn around again, Sig is standing in the water and has moved one-third of the way out, parallel to the point. Can the water be so shallow? It is sandy along the bottom, and this helps explain the ribbon of beach lining the shore. I watch him now, moving slowly, still walking out. Then he descends into the sun-brightened water and begins to swim out toward the center of the bay, only the back of his white head visible in the sparkling, broken surface. When he returns, he rises out of the shallows, steps up onto the dock, drapes a towel the color of red clay over his shoulders, and sits in a chair. And I'll have more reading from this chapter next week. This is reading of Sumner Madison's experience with his friend Sigurd Olsen from Sumner's book, A Field. This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. Thank you for listening.